listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's Friday, so it's time for our national town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders. Sanders.senate.gov is his website, and he's got a very, very active Facebook following as well. Senator Sanders, welcome.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Thank you for joining us. A lot going on in the country right now.
There is. Let me jump to Ferguson, Missouri, and just say a word there. I think everybody is appalled by the apparent shooting of an unarmed young black man. And this is just an issue we have got to deal with all over the country. I've asked for the Department of Justice to investigate the situation. And we can't have a situation in this country where young African-American males walk down streets and worry about their lives. But there's a point in the midst of all of the focus on this incident that I think has not been made. And that, as tragic as this particular incident is, there's even a greater tragedy out there, and that is that youth unemployment in the African-American community is somewhere between 30% and 40%. And I remember being in Detroit last year and talking to a whole lot of young African-Americans. It is just enormously hard for them to get jobs, and especially jobs to pay anything close to a living wage. So if we are going to do something to prevent the loss of an entire generation of young people, we have got to be very aggressive in creating a jobs program that puts people back to work. And real unemployment in this country is much, much higher, not only for the African-American community, but for the entire working force of the United States. Real unemployment is not 6.1%. It's close to 12% if you include those people who have given up looking for work and those people who are working part-time. But right now, the situation, the economic situation for young black workers is just dismal, and we've got to focus on that. And do everything that we can to put our people back to work. So that's an issue that concerns me very much. There's another issue out there, Tom. You know, very often what you have in this country is special interest and the media in general trying to tell us how divided we are as a nation, how there are red states and how there are blue states and how the country is coming apart because people can't talk to each other and all that stuff. I have never believed that for one second. And I think if you look at the polling that's out there, what you find is that on most, not all, but most of the very important issues facing this country, there is a lot more common belief than the media would allow us to suspect. Let me just give you some examples on some of the most important issues facing this country, where the overwhelming majority of the American people, whether they're progressive, conservative, moderate, or whatever, are in fact agreement. To my mind, probably the most important domestic issue that we face as a nation is campaign finance. Because if we continue to allow the Koch brothers or the billionaires to spend unlimited sums of money to elect candidates who represent the wealthy and the powerful, this country is going to be in dismal shape. And you know what? Poll after poll, the American people understand that buying elections is not freedom of speech and that they want strong campaign finance restrictions to prevent big money from buying elections. Overwhelming support among virtually all sectors of the American people. Right now, in probably every state of this country, our infrastructure is collapsing. That's roads, bridges, rail, airports, water systems, wastewater plants, dams, you name it. When the people of America, whatever their political persuasion, are asked, do you think the federal government should invest in the infrastructure, put people back to work and create good-paying jobs? You know what people say across the board? They say, yes, that is what we should do. And common sense dictates, of course, that is what we should do. Again, conservative, progressive, moderate, that's what people think. When you ask people about income and wealth inequality, and you ask them whether or not you think it is appropriate that one out of four major corporations pays nothing in federal income taxes at a time when 95% of all new income is going to the top 1%, do you know what the American people say, Tom? They say, guess what? Yeah, the wealthy and large corporations should start paying their fair share of taxes. when you ask people across the political spectrum, do you think we should cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid to help us with the deficit? You know what the American people say? No, we should not. If anything, we should expand those programs. The numbers are a little bit less strong in terms of global warming, but a strong majority of the American people understand that global warming is real, and they want us to cut carbon emissions. So my point is that, yeah, we can get divided on guns, we can get divided on gay rights, we can get divided on abortion. There are a lot of issues where, in fact, the country is divided. But in truth, on some of the very most important issues, which will determine the future of the American middle class, there is widespread agreement. And our job is to bring people together around those issues and to create an economy that works for ordinary people and not an economy that works just for the people on top. So I think that's an important point to remember when we hear the so-called pundits and the media talk about how divided we are. In fact, on many of the very, very important issues facing this country, we are more united than divided. One other issue that's out there, obviously, I think anyone who is breathing understands eruptions in all parts of the world right now. It's a very dangerous time. And the point that I made this week with regard to the situation in Iraq with this ISIS movement, which kind of wants to bring Iraq back into a 7th century caliphate, is that it should not be the United States alone. ISIS is, in fact, an incredible threat to the region, and how you deal with it is complicated. But the United States is not the only country in the world with an air force, and what we need is an international response to what is going on there. My strong view is we should not have ground troops in. I think, you know, I shake my head, Tom, and I keep thinking about all that business, you know, that Bush and Cheney got us into in the war in Iraq, and what kind of devastating implications and that war brought about.
And that part of it is almost never discussed. They just had L. Paul Bremer on CNN, and they were asking him all these questions and treating him like he was a hero. He's the guy who fired the entire Iraqi army and the entire Iraqi police department.
Well, I mean, that's what corporate media does. It doesn't matter whether you're wrong. You are still an expert. And you're right. They keep trotting out all of these folks who got us into this war, which was devastating to us in terms of loss of life and people who came home with all kinds of injuries, horrendously devastating to the people of Iraq, where I don't know, and no one really knows, but certainly hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives, and created the kind of instability which is now allowing the ISIS and others to do what they're doing. But, you know, the point here is, foreign policy is very difficult and complicated stuff. And before you go to war, man, you got to think it through very, very carefully and understand what unintended consequences are, because certainly that was a war that we never should have gotten into. So those are some. The other issue is that we are, and I know a lot of listeners here are concerned about it. We have worked with Senator John Tester of Montana and Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, and we've managed to get 50 signatures, half of the United States Senate right now, on board an effort to make sure that the Postal Service does not shut down some 80 processing plants around the country, lay off 15,000 workers, and slow mail delivery. So we're making some progress, and I hope we can get some language into some bill to prevent that from happening.
That's great. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. We'll be taking your calls right after this in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back. Senator Sanders' website is sanders.senate.gov. And welcome back. And Paul in South Lyon, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks for all your great work, Senator. There have been some so-called progressives, including Pulitzer Prize-winning exaggerator Glenn Greenwald, who are saying Obama is trying to start another war in Iraq, by saving thousands of Iraqis from being slaughtered by ISIS. The president was against the war from the beginning. He ended the war, and he has resisted Republican attempts to start wars in Syria, Iran, Ukraine, etc. Do you think Obama is trying to start another U.S. invasion of Iraq?
No, I certainly do not, Paul. But I got to tell you, in terms of Syria, many of us had to stop the president and Secretary Kerry from doing what I thought would have been a very dangerous act. Look, the situation there is dangerous, and it is very, very complicated. And I think what the president is doing is thinking long and hard about what our best policies should be. I think in terms of the rescue operation that took place, I think that was the right thing to do, and I supported that. But again, the point that I would make is to the degree that we're going to use airstrikes, it should not just be the United States. There is no reason why we should not be working with other countries around the world. But to answer your question, no, I certainly don't believe that the president is trying to get us into another war.
Okay. Paul, in Fairland, Oklahoma, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
First of all, my thoughts and prayers go out to the people of Ferguson. And what really concerns me about all that military hardware that's being given to these states is going to southern states. And as we all know, they're the radical states, and they're against Obama. And what really concerns me is we saw all these out here soldiers, or look-alike soldiers, and I think a lot of them are ex-soldiers because they still got their military boots on. And what worries me is this PTSD and those guys throwing those flashbang grenades that might trigger, some form of a remembrance of how they were in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Paul, we have just a minute. Well, let's get the senator's thoughts.
Paul, I think when you see pictures of the type of police response in Ferguson, it very much reminds one of an occupying force, not of police officers who are part of a community. And I think that's something we got to work on as a nation. Police have, God knows, it's a difficult job and it's an enormously important job. But good police departments are integrated into their community. They're part of their community and they're not perceived. I mean, that's what community policing, the concept of community policing is about, which we helped bring about when I was mayor here in Burlington and exists in many communities all over the country. You do not want your police department to be seen as an occupying force, heavily armed, putting down local inhabitants. And that's kind of from the distance what it looked like in Ferguson.
We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. It's 20 minutes past noon. Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. It is our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. Cindy in Watervliet, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, it's Watervliet.
Watervliet. My apologies.
Yes, it's in southwest Michigan, and in 2003, Benton Harbor, Michigan, had riots exactly like the ones in Ferguson because of a similar situation of a policeman had chased a motorcyclist and killed him. And the riot started, and it took months to get things settled down. And we have a lot of the same problems. It's one city that's predominantly black, and the black youth there are treated differently than the rest of the county. You were talking about jobs programs, and this comes right into it. Our black youth have been felonized for misdemeanors that the rest of the county, but predominantly white people would not be felonized for. And recently, a church on their own had a program to expunge these old felonies so these guys would be eligible for jobs programs and maybe even get hired into regular jobs. And what I'd like to know from the senator is there more funding for this kind of a program that would go with a jobs program, that would get some of the old felonies off of these young people's records so they could pursue the education and the training and the jobs?
Well, Cindy, that's a great question. In terms of federal funding for jobs, I don't have to tell you that with the Republicans in control of the House, we've had almost no success at all. As part of the immigration bill, which passed the Senate, I managed to get a $1.5 billion jobs program for you, summer jobs program for young people. But that bill has not gone anywhere in the House. But your point is a very, very important point, is that a lot of kids out there do something stupid when they're young, and that felony remains with them for the rest of their lives, making it very difficult for them to get their lives together. And I think there is growing consciousness about addressing that issue, whether it's in Congress or at the state level. I think there is an understanding that when young people do something stupid, there should be an opportunity for us to expunge some of that so they can get their feet back on the ground.
Glenn in Mountain View, Missouri. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, Senator Sanders.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I want to thank you for all your good work for veterans. And I want to ask you, this new VA bill, how does it address Agent Orange disability claims that have been stalled and stalled and stalled? My claim is well over a year old and no action on it whatsoever. And I live in poverty. My wife and I live in abject poverty because I can't work and she can't work because she has to take care of me on a 24-hour-a-day basis. And yet I can't. There's no action whatsoever on my disability claim.
All right. This is what I would suggest, Glenn. Sometimes the truth of the matter is that the VA has provided a significant increase in benefits for many, many more people exposed to Agent Orange. It started with a very narrow framework, but the eligibility level for particular types of diseases has greatly expanded, which was the right thing to do. We're also dealing with a backlog and making sure that people can get their benefits in a timely manner. The what I would suggest that you do, Glenn, give your local congressman or your senator there in Missouri, give them a call, tell them you've been waiting for too long, and see if they can help expedite your claim.
Steve in Palmdale, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hello, Senator Sanders. Regarding the Postal Service's financial problems, with hundreds of thousands of middle-class jobs and a vital government service at stake, what is stopping President Obama from eliminating the retiree health care prefunding mandate with an executive order?
Well, I don't think he can do that with an executive order. You know, he has tried to expand what he can do because of Republican obstructionism and do-nothingism in a number of areas, but you just can't, you know, he doesn't have the authority to do anything he wants to do. Now, the point that Steve is making is that every day, not every day, but every couple of months, including just yesterday, I think, we keep hearing reports about how the Postal Service is losing all kinds of money, how they're going broke. The simple reality is that that is not accurate. The Postal Service, as Steve reminds us, is forced uniquely of any government agency in America, in fact, of any entity in the United States, to pay about $5.5 billion every single year into a future retiree health benefit program, which an account which now is over $40 billion. If you take away that requirement, which the Postal Service uniquely has to live with, in fact, the Postal Service this year will make about $1 billion in profits. And we've got legislation in, Steve, which has a whole lot of support. I think we have over 30 co-sponsors on that to do away with that onerous requirement. And when you do that, the Postal Service will be in reasonably good financial shape. Right now, what we're focusing on is to prevent the Postal Service from shutting down 82 processing plants throughout this country, 15,000 jobs, delay and slow down mail delivery Service. And we've got 50 signatures. Half the United States Senate is on board preventing the Postal Service from doing that.
Mark in Durham, North Carolina. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. In regards to campaign finance reform, I'm curious, why would you want to interfere with the best oligarchy money can buy?
Well, Mark, I think there are one or two reasons why we want to interfere with the best oligarchy that money can buy. And the point that Mark makes facetiously is not a funny issue. It is a deadly serious issue. And I think Tom will take the book and continue that discussion after the...
Sure. We got a break. We're hitting a break here. We will pick it up on the other side. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Bernie's taking your calls. And be sure to check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And in addition to sanders.senate.gov, you can also find a very active Facebook page for Bernie. Easy to find on Facebook. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. You're here with us, Senator?
I am right here. And, Tom, let's get back to Mark from North Carolina's
sure.
question. He was being facetious when he talked about not wanting to disturb the great oligarchy that we have right now in terms of bringing about real campaign finance reform. But obviously this is not a laughing matter. It is the most serious issue that we face. What we're looking right now in this country is almost all of the new income goes to the top 1%. We have a grotesque inequality in terms of wealth, where the top 1% own 38% of the financial wealth and the bottom 60% own all of 2.3%. And that gap between the very, very rich and everybody else is growing wider. And then because of this disastrous Supreme Court Citizens United decision, that enables the Koch brothers and other billionaires to spend as much money as they want on the political process. So what oligarchy is about is when you have a few families or a small number of people reaping the benefits of the economy, and that's certainly the case right now. But it is also when you have a few families controlling the political process, and that is where we are rapidly moving because of the Citizens United decision. Now, the good news is that, as I understand it, in September, there will be a constitutional amendment coming up in the Senate begin the process of overturning Citizens United. And I hope very much that all over this country, people put pressure on Congress. I think it'll have a lot of Democratic support. I don't know how many, if any, Republicans will be supportive of that effort. But if we do not want to, in fact, become a full-fledged oligarchy, where a few families control what goes on economically and politically, we'd better overturn Citizens United, we'd better move to public funding of elections, and we need some fundamental changes in our economy to protect the middle class and not just give all of the benefits to the people on top.
Amen. Lisa in Eureka, California, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Okay. Hi, my name is Lisa, and I believe capitalism requires capital. Why are we not taxing idle cash? Inflation is a tax on everyone with savings. I understand it hurts millionaires and billionaires more, but if we would tax idle cash, $2 trillion sitting there doing nothing in corporations, offshore accounts, I don't care where on the globe they spend it, but when money works, people work. And waiting around for the rich to decide to actually do long-term investments when they can make money by the second, high-frequency trading, there's a reason why we have zero net capital investment in this country, even with the Bush tax cuts. Because you can make money shuffling paper. What the founders
okay.
feared...
Lisa, okay. let's let Bernie respond to that, please.
Well, I think Lisa makes a very, very good point. The function of finance, in a sense, is supposed to be the grease, the means by which the economy runs. But what has happened increasingly in recent years is that Wall Street and the huge financial institutions, as Lisa indicates, become an island unto themselves. And their goal is not to invest in the real economy so the companies can produce products or provide services. Their goal is to make money themselves
through all kinds of complicated and in some cases certainly illegal operations, subprime lending being one. What I could tell you, Lisa, is that we know that the United States Treasury alone, not to mention what's going on all over the world, but just the United States Treasury loses about $100 billion a year of tax revenue because these corporations are stashing their money in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and other tax havens. We have introduced legislation that would end that. But needless to say, some of my Republican colleagues and some Democrats are not all that enthusiastic about it. But Lisa is absolutely right. Well, we have got to get money out into the real economy to create jobs. And when you create jobs, people have a disposable income and they create more jobs. And we cannot continue to have a situation where Wall Street lives into a world unto itself.
Claire in Baraboo, Wisconsin. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, thank you, Tom. Senator, I must say, I think you would make an absolutely excellent next president, and I hope you are still seriously considering that. My comment is about the over-militarization of these small police forces all over the country. If I recall correctly, that started with the Homeland Security Department.
The 1033 program started in 1997, I think. And it was to aid the war on drugs. And that was where...
Go ahead. Okay. Sorry, Tom. Isn't this just another example of the military-industrial complex making money off fear?
Well, Claire, let me just say, first of all, I'm going to be in your town, I think, on September 12th. It's Baraboo, Wisconsin, a beautiful town. And at the county fair, there's going to be a fighting bog fest. So I look forward to being there. You know, Claire makes a good point, and that is, you know, and I speak as a former mayor, running police departments are not easy, and having good police departments are not easy, and good cops are not easy. But the best police departments are police departments in which people perceive them to be part of the community. And people, when there's a problem, call the police and expect the police to do the right thing. Where you have policemen out on the streets talking to people who maybe grew up in the community or certainly have a lot in common and a lot of sympathy for the people in the community. Bad police departments are seen as oppressors who are hiding behind a lot of heavy-duty military equipment, as Claire indicated. So I think that that is a real issue, and if there is any silver lining in this Ferguson, Missouri situation, maybe that's a lesson that we can learn.
Okay. Let's see here. Dick, in Bettendorf, Iowa, you are on the air with Senator Sanders. Dick? No Dick. Joyce, in Kilmarnock, Virginia, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Speaking on that that subject of military weapons in the many cities in the country, I'm concerned about the depleted uranium that was used to build a lot of these weapons for Afghanistan and Iraq fighting. Have these been vetted?
I don't think that is the major issue here, Joyce. Depleted uranium is another issue that we have to worry about from, you know, the Gulf War and so forth. But I think the main issue here is creating police departments that are part of communities and not seen as entities that overpower people, not seen as an occupying force. And I think that's an issue that police departments all over the country and in Washington we have to work on.
Okay. John, in Erin, New York, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom, Senator Sanders. I was wondering if either one of you guys heard about the weekend of the Gulf disaster oil leak. Three Mile Island released something like 200 rems of radiation, taking out a supposed fan, but I think what they actually did was remove the core. But they radiated the heck out of us. And I reported it to a bunch of people. Nobody do anything. But I wonder if you guys ever heard anything about that.
No, I myself have not, John.
No, me neither. Okay, let's let's see here, Catherine in Corona, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, good morning, Senator Sanders. Thank you for all the good work that you've done for us over the years. I am just shocked at all this military equipment. I guess it's coming under this program, 1033, grenade launchers, you know, the tanks with made to, I'm sorry, I can't think. All this military equipment going to these police departments across the country.
It's been over $4 billion worth since 1997.
Yes, and I mean, terrorism is down, drugs are down, I mean, all this crime is down, and this is just frightening. I mean, even in a community, when you see this on the street, this just isn't America. I just thought I was looking at a war zone somewhere else.
You know, it's funny. There was a comment in one of the papers from a fellow who came back from Afghanistan. He said, you know, we went into some very, very dangerous areas in Afghanistan with less equipment than what we saw in Ferguson.
Mm. Yeah, I saw a number of tweets from military folks to that effect. Now you've got Rand Paul and a number of Democrats saying, let's end this 1033 program where the federal government pays military contractors to give weapons of war to police departments. And it's a very very complex situation. We just have 30 seconds, Senator.
I think there is. You know, let me just pick up on that point. I think these pictures going across America of police departments that look like a military force occupying a neighborhood is not something that the American people want to see or feel comfortable about. And I think we do have to take a hard look at that policy and the broader issue of best police practices and how we create police departments that protect people and work with people and help people when they're in need and deal with crime effectively rather than being seen as oppressors.
Yeah, I have to say, I didn't even know until this week about this 1033 program. And it's just, it's curling my hair. We'll be back with Senator Sanders answering your questions at our national town hall meeting here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. And, of course, he's on Facebook. You can easily find him there. And welcome back. Joe in Willow Creek, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Joe? Joe is listening to his TV and not his telephone. Kathy in Valparaiso, Indiana, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Mr. Hartman, and good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a suggestion for Senator Sanders. My idea was instead of giving the police department the military tanks and things, is why don't we do what we call recycle, reuse, and repurpose, and it would help our environment, our industries, our infrastructure, and our jobs, and melt them down and use them for bridges, the tires for roads, and be more creative than using them for fighting. Use them for peace.
Well, I think you raise the broader issue about how much money we spend on military and whether, in fact, we have to spend as a nation almost as much as the rest of the world combined and how we get our national priorities right and why we are not investing in jobs for young people rather than in jails to put them away in. So I think you raise a whole lot of interesting questions.
Gary in Sacramento, California, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Oh, hi, guys. Yes, Senator Sanders. My main question is, I'd like to know what the latest news is on the tariffs. I know you've talked about that several times. And then a couple of side notes. I noticed Tom has a sign that says Sanders won. I think that's a great idea. And then, you know, everybody's talking about the militarization of the police forces. That's just not okay. The other thing is, you know, we talked about felonies earlier. I'm sorry to put all this in on you. But anyway, the felonies earlier, there are so many silly little felonies, but felonies nonetheless, and I don't know if they're federal or state level, but it's almost like we want everybody to have a felony, and then we got them under control.
Well, you've raised a whole lot of questions there. In terms of the tariff issue, which obviously is about our trade policies, as I think Tom and I have discussed for a number of years now on the show, we both agree that our current trade policies are a disaster. They enable large corporations to shut down in this country, and we've lost some 50,000 factories in America in the last 15 or so years. Millions of decent-paying jobs in these companies go to China, Mexico, or other low-wage countries, and they then ship their products right back into this country. That makes no sense at all. We have to change our trade policies. In terms of the presidential race, what I have said and repeat, it is something that I am thinking about. There are enormous problems facing the middle class and the working class of this country. I believe that good public policy can create the millions of jobs that we desperately need. I think we should be raising the minimum wage to a living wage. I am embarrassed that the United States is the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people as a right, and yet we end up spending much more per capita on health care than every other country. You know, I think our kids and our grandchildren will look back at us with dismay to see how we have not acted on climate change. So, you know, those are some of the issues out there that somebody at least has got to be talking about and fighting for.
We'll be back with more of Senator Sanders on our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, right after this. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. And Chuck in Bartelzo, Illinois. Am I saying that right, Chuck? Thanks for listening to XM Radio.
Yeah, you actually got it right that time. Thank you. Cool. Thank you, Bernie, for taking my call. My question is, what can we do at the federal level to address gentrification? Because I live probably 50 miles from Ferguson, where they had riots, and it does not look anything like Ferguson. It is a different country. There, it is lily white. You would never find a single black person anywhere near where I live. But you go 50 miles, and it's a hellhole in East St. Louis and North County. Why is it such a disaster, and what can the federal government do?
Well, what the federal government can do is to understand that we have more people living in poverty today than any time in the history of this country. That while the media may not necessarily report it every day, you have millions and millions of people who are struggling hard just to keep their heads above water. That poverty relates to crime because kids are dropping out of school, there's nothing for them, and then they do destructive or self-destructive activities. Then they get arrested and they get a felony, and then it's virtually impossible for them to get a job throughout their lives. So I think what the federal government can do is make a commitment to do everything that we can to make sure that all of our kids, regardless of income, get a decent education, focus on the need for jobs all over this country, especially with young people. Youth unemployment today is 20%. As I mentioned earlier, African-American youth unemployment is much higher than that, somewhere between 30 and 40%. And as a nation, what we have got to learn, what many other countries on earth have already learned, is that if you invest in your young people in terms of education, in terms of job training, in terms of nutrition and housing, you know what? You don't have to invest quite as much in putting people in jail. We have more people in jail in the United States of America than any other country on earth, including China. A communist authoritarian country has fewer people in jail than we have. And that should suggest that we do some very fundamental rethinking about our national priorities. Invest in the kids, not in jails.
Henry in San Francisco, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator?
Yep.
Mr. Hartman, thank you very much for your programs. I like all your programs. And, Senator, thank you for talking to me. I just wanted to mention that the real problem in this country is the top-bottom axis is not really – we are all being confused and everybody's focused on the left and the right line. but I see the problem. Everything else causing all the issues in this country is actually the top bottom line. That's nobody
economically. You're talking.
Well, Henry is absolutely right. And there is a reason, Henry, that we're not focusing on it, is that, you know, to a significant degree, the people who own the media are the top 1%, and they don't want us to focus on that. What they want to do is talk about the issues where people have different points of view, and that's fine. But on issue after issue, as I mentioned earlier in this program, whether you're conservative, whether you're progressive, people understand there is something profoundly wrong when so few have so much and so many have so little. And it's not just a moral issue. This is an economic issue, because if you have tens of millions of Americans who have no money in their pocket to spend, you're not going to create the jobs that we need. Your spending is my job. When people spend money, they create an economy in terms of goods and services, which create jobs. And there is just a limit to how much the rich are going to spend. So this issue of income and wealth inequality, which Henry refers to, is the major issue facing our country. And it spills over, of course, into politics, because you have families like the Koch brothers, who are worth some $80 billion. The wealthiest, second wealthiest family in America are now spending hundreds of millions of dollars to elect candidates who will make the rich even richer. And these are the candidates who will cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, and give more tax breaks to billionaires. And if we don't get a handle on this issue of income and wealth inequality, it will lead this country into oligarchy, both economically and politically.
George, in Aurora, Illinois, you are on the air, Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Senator Sanders, as a retired letter carrier, I'd like to thank you for all you've done for the Postal Service, and I'd like to alert you to another problem that may be coming down the pike that will affect the Postal Service. There are reports among our unions that Postmaster General Donahue is planning another pre-fund. This one would put money aside for future workmen's compensation benefits payments. And if that goes through, that would just destroy us.
But George, I think, I don't have the paper in front of me, that is not Donahue's idea. That's an idea that came from members of Congress. And you're right, it is absolutely not a good idea, not for the postal workers and not for the government in general, for other federal employees. But right now, our focus is in two areas. Number one, to prevent the shutdown of 82 processing plants, 15,000 jobs, which will slow mail delivery and lead to the kind of death spiral that many of us fear in the Postal Service. And second of all, most importantly, get rid of this onerous, unprecedented program by which the Postal Service has to put $5.5 billion into future health benefits for retirees. So if we can deal with those issues right now, I think we're going to put the Postal Service in a lot better position. And in fact, as I mentioned earlier, if you exclude that $5.5 billion prepayments for future health retirees, Postal Service this year will make about $1 billion in profits. And that's the direction we've got to move.
Bernie, we have about a half, or Senator, we have about a half a minute here. Closing thoughts?
Yeah, well, my closing thoughts, I mean, when you hear all of the issues being discussed today and virtually every week, Tom, so many of them come back to the reality that in this country we have a government which is dominated by the 1% and their lobbyists, who spend huge sums of money lobbying, but also in campaigns. And you're now seeing Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, and the others prepared to spend unbelievable amounts of money to elect candidates who could care less about the middle class, whose only job is to represent the wealthy and the powerful. So what we have got to do is get out there. We have got to be talking to our friends and our neighbors and our families. We've got to get people out to the polls. And if we can do that, I think we're going to be okay. If not, I fear very much what's going to be happening politically in this country in the coming years.
Senator, thank you.
Okay, Tom, thank you very much. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And it's very interesting. We, you know, history tells us, and if you look at all the developed countries of the world, that one of the best ways to build a strong middle class is to unionize people. Yet the Bradley Foundation, the Walton Foundation, the Walmart fame, and a number of other very wealthy right-wing groups are funding this week. It's called the National Employee Freedom Week. And the executive director of this is Victor Jakes. He is also the executive vice president of the Nevada Policy Research Institute, NPRI.org. Victor, welcome to the program.
Tom, great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
So how are you going to sell this to people that they should abandon their unions for the benefit of the Walton family and the Koch brothers? I don't get it.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the great things about National Employee Freedom Week, which is a week where we let union members know that they have the freedom to opt out of their union, is we really don't need to sell it. What our polling has showed is that over 28% of union members right now would like to leave their union if they could do so without penalty. And what we want to do is we want to tell, you know, your listeners, hey, if you're a union worker and you want out, you have options. If you're in a right-to-work state, you can leave entirely. Oftentimes, you have to submit your resignation within a certain time period or a window restriction. But even if you're in a non-right-to-work state, you can become an agency fee payer and receive a rebate of your union's political dues, or you can become a religious objector
and redirect. So you too can screw your union in a variety of ways. I'm looking at this poll. You say this isn't a poll. This is a survey done by Google Surveys, which, by the way, allows you to choose your target audience. And in your poll, you say, if it were possible to opt out of membership in a labor union, not yours, without losing your job or any other penalty, would you do it? And 71.29% of the people that you selected as your target audience say no.
Well, let me dig into a little bit into that poll. That's a two-part. So the first question is a screening question, and we ask people, are you a member of a labor union? And so if they said yes, then they get the second question. So that poll question is just...
You didn't publish that.
Members. Well, we do. We explain it on the website. We say, you know...
I'm reading the website right now. I've got to print it out in my hand. The general surveys are based on 500 to 502 respondents and were conducted by Google Consumer Surveys. The poll of union members surveyed 454 union members. Uh-huh. So you were able to call 454 people out of that.
No, so they're separate surveys. So
right.
What we did is we did a survey of union members, and we said, you know, hey, if it were possible to leave your union without penalty, would you
do so?
And, you know, what's so amazing about that is that you already can leave your union without penalty. And, you know, this week started because here in Nevada, we ran a small campaign letting teachers know they could leave their union between July 1st and July 15th. And we had teachers say, you know, I've been teaching for years here in Las Vegas, and I never knew I could leave. I've always wanted to opt out, but I never knew. And so, you know, what we're doing is saying, look, if you like your labor union, great, stay in your labor union. But if you're one of those 4 million union members who are dissatisfied and who want to leave, know that you have the ability to leave.
Victor, why, you know, outside of getting a paycheck, I guess, why would you and, you know, I get why the people who are funding you want people to leave their unions, but why would you?
Well,
do you have an ideology here, or you're
yeah,
just...
Yeah, I do. I believe in empowering people. I believe in empowering unions.
Well, that's what unions do, is they empower their workers. Unions are democracies inside kingdoms, inside the workplace that is not democratic.
You know, I don't know if you've, you know, I'm sure you've talked to lots of union members who like their labor unions, and you know, good for
I
you.
Am a union member. I'm a member of Ask Me SAG.
Oh, excellent. Well, I've talked to people who are in union member organizations, and they say, I want out because this union gives me poor service. I want out because I can spend my $700 better than this union official who's making $600,000. I want out because the union's spending my money on politics I disagree with.
No, enough people have listened to this siren song of yours over the years that unionization and private sector unionization in the United States is now at 7%. And so now we have this situation after 30 years of this kind of PR that you're putting out here, where 30 years ago, the largest employer in the United States was General Motors, and they paid in today's dollars, on average, around $50 an hour with full benefits out of full pension. And now, as a consequence of this ideology that you're promoting, Victor, the largest employer in the United States is Walmart, the Walton Foundation funding your efforts, is Walmart, and they pay roughly $10 an hour on average, and their benefits suck.
Well,
how is that a good thing for this country? I mean,
I think there's a lot of factors going into the fall of General Motors that, you know, don't involve employees choosing to leave the auto workers union if they aren't satisfied with it. You know, certainly there's a lot of you know, foreign competition and, you know, people being able to provide a better product.
But how is it a good thing for America that working people are, you know, that the largest employer in the country is Walmart, and they're paying so little that people qualify for food stamps? The average community, every Walmart in the country is costing its local community on average around $1 million a year. This is corporate welfare that's going to, and I'm not talking about the tax abatements and all these other kind of things that they negotiate. That's huge too. It's much larger. But this is just the money that the local community is paying in taxes to subsidize the food stamps and the housing support and other things that, and medical care, Medicaid, that Walmart employees qualify for, because the business model of Walmart and of the fast food industry and the other people that you know are your champions, are their business model is, let the people pay for the costs of our employees and we'll pay this minimal amount.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what we're championing with National Employee Freedom Week is the rights of a union member to say, look, if you don't want to be in your union, you can leave your union. And that's something that too many union members don't know. And, you know, if there are people who say, look, I love my union, I want to support my union.
Every union member, when they get their union membership packet, when they get the information from the union about what union that they're a member of, wherever their workplace is, it's very clearly laid out. They're, you know, depending on whether it's a right to work for less state or whether it's not, it's very clearly laid out information. Plus the,
you know, Tom, it's interesting because when you talk to people who aren't as involved in the policy side of it as you and I are, you know, people are busy living their lives. They're busy caring for their kids. They're busy working at their jobs. And you would just
at a good unionized job that pays good wages and benefits because of the union.
Well, you know, and if people want to join a union, great. I've got no problem with that. But for the people, the 4 million union employees who want to leave, you know, I don't think the union should have any problem with those people leaving. And if the union doesn't want to represent them, then, you know, get rid of exclusive representation. That's what the union.
What you're promoting, Victor, is the destruction of the middle class in America.
Well, you know,
I think that's not only, you know, not only economically stupid, but I think it's morally a crime.
So, if someone wants to opt out of an organization and we let them know that they can leave that organization, you think that's morally reprehensible?
Yes.
You know, I think that's empowering someone to make the decision that's best for them. You know, what I think is morally reprehensible.
Well, if you want people to be empowered to make the decision that's best for them, why don't you come out in favor of card check? Let people join a union just as easily as you want them to leave a union.
Because you know what happens? I was talking with a home
daycare. We can't have that, right?
I was talking with a home daycare worker from Minnesota.
Why don't we unionize Walmart?
A union organizer came into my house, came in and lied to me about what I was signing, because that's what happens with card check, is you have people lying to employees saying, oh, this is a survey, or you'll find out more information, and they don't tell them what they're actually signing.
So workers are so stupid that they can't read the document that's put in front of them. This is what you're telling me now?
Tom,
the reason why we shouldn't be helping people unionize is because they're stupid?
But I will tell you that intimidation is real. Unions use it often.
You think employers don't intimidate their employees?
That's why you need a secret ballot.
You think employers don't intimidate their employees, particularly if those employees are trying to unionize?
That's so important.
Have you looked at Walmart? They closed down a store because the people voted to unionize. They closed it. The country of Canada is looking at suing them.
And you know what? If you want to leave an organization that you're not happy with and you're a union member, you've got that right, and that's the information we want people to know about.
Okay, Victor Jacks, the website is npri.org. Thank you, Victor.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Amazing. National Employee Freedom Week. Well, hey, yeah, let's do that with Card Check. You are free to leave a union. You're free to join a union. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Bill. And, whoop, Bill just hung up. Richard in St. Paul, Minnesota, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Thank you, Tom. First time caller.
Well, thank you.
Your Walgreens story about taking taxes overseas?
Yeah, they backed down, but a lot of other companies haven't.
Why don't they put out a bulletin or some kind of a bulletin that what these corporations' names of them so the public can see them outright? Because I think it's helping. Walgreens have a lot of bad press here, you might say, towards that. Well, if you put out a bulletin set, people can stay away from them stores. That's what I said when I walked into Walmart that day. I found out, I said, well, this is the last time you'll see me.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out of the store.
Yeah.
And I'll thank them for coming back when I go in there again. But I think that these companies should all be put out in the public so they know who they are. Walgreens, I see you've got Walgreens, but Walmart, their stock market went down this week because of the same thing. People are putting a lot of pressure on them.
Well, I think Walmart stock went down because there's a concern that they might have come back up. The last couple of days have been a bump back up. But the problem that Walmart has been having, and they identified it themselves about 6 or 8 months ago, is that the working poor, which is most of Walmart's customer base, the working poor, because so many people are not in unions anymore, are making so little, and their income is declining, essentially, as a consequence of a variety of factors, but lack of unionization is a big one, that they can't afford to buy stuff at Walmart anymore. And so, you know, Walmart is seeing their own customers. But the inversion that you're talking about, Richard, which is where a company buys an overseas company and then moves their headquarters there. And in this case, there's a chain of pharmacies in the UK called Boots. And Boots either bought or was bought by a company based out of Switzerland. So they moved their tax domicile to Switzerland. And then that same company was the company that Walgreens was either going to buy or be bought by, I forget which, so that they could move their tax domicile to Switzerland and pay lower taxes. And even though it's here in the United States that they're making money, that's just one of a number of ways that corporations avoid paying taxes. I mean, Apple is sitting on billions of dollars offshore because they sell to themselves, basically. They, you know, one division of the company sells to another division of the company. They manufacture something overseas, and let's say it costs them $5 to make it, and they're going to sell it for $100 at retail. And so the wholesale value to them is $50. So when they ship it to themselves, they charge them. So they have the choice. They can charge themselves the $5 that it costs to make it in China, or they can charge themselves the $50 that they're going to sell at the retail stores here in the United States. If they charge themselves the $50, then they have a profit here in the United States. If they charge themselves the $5, then they have a profit in China. If they can keep that profit overseas, which is what Apple is doing, then they don't have to pay taxes on it. So there's a whole bunch of, and that's a strategy, by the way, that the Democrats in the Senate tried to put an end to, and actually had a majority of more than 50 votes to end, and it got filibustered in the United States Senate. So it's just, and John Boehner, of course, would never even take it up in the House. Richard, thanks for your call. You identify a really serious problem. We'll be back 20 minutes past the hour. Past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday, although Mark Thompson is going to drop by in our third hour, and I believe he's in Ferguson, Missouri right now. And the latest news is that Michael Brown appears to be a significant suspect. You look at the video, and it appears that this is actually him, although, you know, I'm not a court of law, neither are you. But in an unarmed robbery of a convenience store where they grabbed a box of cigarillos and pushed aside the guy who owns the store and then walked out. That said, when did petty robbery become a capital offense? When did it become something that we execute people for? It's a new twist. It's going to change the narrative and the dialogue about this whole thing. This is going to be what the right and Fox News exclusively focus on, I guarantee. And, you know, I just have to say, it's no justification. You don't kill somebody because you suspect that they are a robber. I mean, when they're walking down the street, I mean, it's just, you don't, there's a lot of things you can do short of killing somebody. Anyhow, Heather in Las Vegas. Hey, Heather, what's up?
Hi. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. This is the gentleman you had on about the teachers coming out of the union.
Right.
That billboard went up slightly after the school year ended, and now we're in a situation in Nevada. We're already the 50th worst state for schools as it is, and now we're short 800 teachers, and there's only a week before school is getting ready to start. I think the teachers that might have taken advantage of that don't understand how great unions actually are. I grew up in Michigan, and there's sometimes I'm amazed that they don't understand we're in a right-to-work state, and at least with the unions, they have the protection of somebody speaking on their behalf. They have great insurance, and most people want to be in a union because if you're not, you could get fired for just having blue eyes one day. I mean, they have no reason to – they can fire you for any excuse out here.
Yep.
So at least with a union, you're protected, and – It's sometimes exhausting to see billboards like that all over Las Vegas. I mean, that's been going on for about 2 months now.
Well, the Walton Foundation has a lot of money, and so do a lot of these, you know, these right-wing billionaires and these foundations, and these guys are running with it. Heather, thank you for sharing your thoughts and experience. James in Chicago. Hey, James. James? No, James. Let's try Jerry in Woodbury, New Jersey. Hey, Jerry, can you hear me?
Yes, that's me, Tom.
What's up?
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I called you a couple months ago. You know, it's the parasites like this guy, Victor, that just called you that helps just bring the country down another level lower. I have worked, I am a union electrician in Philadelphia. I've also, for the last 4 years, been driving a truck over the road. And I've been from New Jersey to California. And you know what I saw across every different highway? Poor people. Not middle class, poor people. Trailer homes, broken down homes, closed up homes. I didn't see middle class neighborhoods. If you really want to see a decline in this country, take a ride across the country. I've also been an electrical contractor, so I've done it all. I've been non-union, union, and I've been a businessman. And the best that my family lived is when we belonged to a union. And people in the unions themselves have to get more active.
Yeah.
And I'm just returning back to work as an electrician now, back into the union, because times have got better. Half the local was out when the crash happened in 2008. By 2010, there wasn't any work. But guys like this, I'm really curious about that Google survey and the targeted audience, and 4 million union members want to opt out.
Yeah, they're extrapolating that from 485 responses to a Google survey. Yeah, on the internet.
So it goes from 400. You extrapolate 4 million from 485.
Yeah.
You're way off. There's probably only 13 to 15 million union members to begin with, and I would highly doubt that a quarter of them want to get out.
Yeah. Well, that's what the Google survey showed, and I agree with you. I think that it's nonsense. But you know what can you say? They've got a PR campaign going, and somebody needs to be talking back to them. So I appointed me, Jerry. Thank you for the call, James in Spring City, Tennessee. Hey, James, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Great. Sorry to hear Danielle's out today.
She's actually running the video right now, so Louisa's answering the phones.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Great.
So Jim is out today. So what's up?
Well, I'd like to back you up on this union thing. I mean, if people were just really stopping and freezing place here and they think about what's been going on with the deregulation of our law and how much of an effect that's had on everything in our country.
Yeah.
Including unions. I mean, it's really taking the teeth out of the effectiveness of unions. If people just hang in there and really bone up in their politics, bone up in the history of what things have been, what the things have been happening in this country and how this money has really torn this country apart, buying our politics, interfering with our abilities to be heard. The lobbying voice is very loud. And like I said before, I basically look at this lobbying as corporate, hostile corporate takeover of this country.
Yeah. And well, that's where we're at right now. I would say that we are in the midst of an oligarchy. Bernie says we're going to hit an oligarchy. I think we're already there. This study just came out. How much impact does the average American have in public policy decisions? In other words, in legislation? Zero. The unions have some influence. So workers can have some influence if they're members of a union. But otherwise, they have no say in what Congress does because Congress is listening to the lobbyists. And yeah, the unions are big enough to lobby them. But that's the only way the average person, thanks James for the call, it's the only way the average person can have any say in public policy decisions. It's crazy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We'll be back with your calls here on Anything Goes Friday right after this. Welcome back to Anything Goes Friday. Just to reprise some older things I've talked about in the past that I'd like to mention again. Just going through my stack here. If you make 50 grand a year, which most people don't, average income in the United States is around between $23,000 and $26,000 a year. Average household income is a little less than $50,000 a year because on average more than two people per house work now compared to 30 years ago when it was like about 1.3 persons per house. But if you make 50 grand a year in your household, just to use a nice round number, you pay $247 a year for defense. That's a lot of money. $4 a year for FEMA, for natural disaster relief, $4. $22 for unemployment insurance, which John Boehner will not give you, by the way. You pay the tax as long as you're working, but when you stop working, if you want to have your unemployment insurance extended, have a conversation with John Boehner. But in any case, it costs you $22.88 a year if you make 50 grand a year. If you make 50 grand a year, you pay $32 a year for SNAP, for food stamps for other people. $32 a year. You pay $7 a year for welfare, all welfare benefits for everybody on welfare, humans on welfare. You pay $44 a year to cover the retirement and disability of government workers, both civilian and military. And a large chunk of that is the military. That's $44 a year. And you pay $235 a year for Medicare, which you will be eligible for when you turn 65. And you pay $4,000 a year in corporate subsidies. $4,000 a year in corporate subsidies. So as Bitchy Pundit says, are you sure you're PO'd at the right people? Yeah. So anyway, that and Ferguson, Missouri. This I thought this was really interesting. This is over at the Daily Beast. Police in Ferguson, Missouri once charged a man with destruction of property for bleeding on their uniforms while four of them allegedly beat him. This is how the complaint that was filed against this guy reads. The guy was arrested because somebody by his name, who had a name, same first and last name, different different middle initial and different social security number, but same first and last name, and they were both African Americans. This guy was arrested, and they beat the crap out of him. He's a 52-year-old welder. His name was Henry Davis. They arrested him before the sun came up. And he was like, I don't know what, you know, what, on or about the 20th day of September 20th, 2009, the above-named defendant did then and there unlawfully commit the offense of property damage, to wit, did transfer blood to the uniform. Yeah, that's what they charged the guy with. The guy that they wrongly arrested, this is the Ferguson police, Ferguson, Missouri. Anyhow, Greg in Jackson Springs, North Carolina. Hey, Greg, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Nothing gets my blood boiling more than to listen to a fella that creates a company to bring him a income to deny income to other people. To run a survey like he did is just absolutely ridiculous. Anybody that doesn't like their union can quit their job. But what his survey is saying, that 4 million people like their job but want to get rid of their union. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, what his survey says actually is 485 people, that 20 out of 485 people, 28% of them said yes, they would consider leaving their union if they could. Everything else has been extrapolated from that little data window, and you can... because this was done as a Google survey, you can say to Google, I only want you to survey people who fit a particular profile. So this might be only people who say that their principal source of news is Fox News, for example. Or it might be people who say that their political affiliation is Republican. Or it could be, you know, even though they're a union member. And, and you know, I don't know how they calibrated this survey. They did not disclose it. And he certainly was not about to tell us all about it on the radio. But
well, American worker, specifically the young American worker, has no history to go on. But what they can look at is that in the last 30 years, the establishment out there has told them that unions are no good and that you won't have Social Security when you get there. So this is the only thing that they've heard.
Yeah.
Yet.
And they're both lies.
Since they've been born. The average pay for worker, including union workers, has gone down.
Yep. Steadily.
Up.
I mean, this is what Reaganomics brought us. 33 years of Reaganomics have ripped the guts out of the middle class. We've gone from the largest employer in the country being GM, paying $50 an hour plus benefits and a pension, to the largest employer in the country being Walmart, paying $10 an hour.
And
on a good day.
I used to be a union elected union official at an airline that I worked at for 20 years and went down the tubes. But every contract that we negotiated, the other non-union airline in Atlanta, Georgia, would match by 5% our contract. When Eastern Airlines went under, the employees that did the jobs at Delta started to lose their pay, take away their benefits. They were benefiting from the union that was at Eastern Airlines.
Right.
And today, those people are making about the same amount of money they were in 1991 when Eastern Airlines went under.
Right, before inflation. I mean, not adjusted for inflation, which means that they're making less when you calibrate it for inflation. Greg, spot on.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Chrissy in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on the air.
Appreciate what you do.
Thank you,
just
Chrissy.
To reiterate what your previous caller was talking about there, I've been associated over the course of my lifetime with four different unions, three different states, from my father, who made 40 cents an hour back in the day, to when he was about 30, 35, joined a union, and he made a living wage for the rest of his life.
Yep.
A couple of sons and a husband, and one son who has a wife with cancer. His union works with him to keep him working when he needs to and let him off when he needs to. You think Walmart or any of the non-union places like that would be that kind of have that kind of compassion? Absolutely not. And just one other thing here. I don't know who this Jack fellow is, a corporate shill or a political shill for, sometimes one and the same. but he is definitely full of it. If a person wants to quit a union, they just stop paying union dues. And I also know not all unions are perfect, but to do away with them is, what is that saying, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah. Yeah, we are the only developed country in the world that doesn't have more than half of our employees members of a union. And I mean, it's like in the 80 and 90% region for most of the European countries, and at least the industrialized European countries, Germany, France, the Scandinavian countries. And we're at 6 or 7% now as a result. And by the way, we were at 30% when Ronnie Reagan came into office. So, Chrissy, thank you for the call. Michael in Smithfield, North Carolina. You want to talk about coal ash?
Yes, yes, sir. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm well.
I tell you
are
one
too.
Thing, Tom. I'm doing just fine. And I tell you what, Tom, you know, the legislator in North Carolina, the General Assembly, which that's also controlled by the Republican Party, they have not found no way to how we're going to make do clean up for the coal ash spill, and two, they're going to do energy progress, is what I think it's now called. They're going to make us pay for it for the cleanup. And I think personally that's not right.
Which energy company's coal waste is this?
Duke Energy.
Oh, yeah. And they basically own your governor, don't they, in North Carolina, Pat McCrory?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't he work for them for 28 years or something like that?
29 years.
29 years, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And there was a big wrote-up article about him yesterday. If you ever read the largest newspaper in North Carolina, it's called the News and Observer, that he misstated information or something like that to the public about the coal ash or whatever. It was pretty interesting. I read it yesterday. It's been a big deal, and I think personally it's just not right for Duke Energy to make us clean it up, and it was their own mess.
Yeah. And so you're going to have to clean this up with your tax dollars from your community there in Smithfield, North Carolina?
Yep.
That's incredible.
Yep.
That's incredible.
I know, and Governor McCrory, you know, he's not going to do anything. You know for a fact he's going to be loyal to Duke Energy no matter what.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's governor. I mean, come on, let's say what is. I mean, it's, you know, we don't need to dance around this. Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for the heads up on that. It's great to hear from you, and much appreciate you listening to the program. 15 minutes before the hour on Anything Goes Friday here in the summer. Beautiful August day in Washington, D.C. We're getting a little polar vortex air, I think. It's getting cold at night, which is not a good sign for the coming winter, but we're enjoying it while we can. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with your calls on Anything Goes Friday right after this. So check out, our website has been completely redesigned and rebuilt. Jamie and Nigel and Sue, it's incredible. Check it out. And welcome back. Bill in Dayton, Ohio, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hello, Tommy. Thank you. We've been watching you for many years, and we've been grabbing your books. Crash of 16 is enough to make you have your hair stem turned. I'm calling as a letter carrier. I just retired from the Postal Service, and I do believe the best way to save some money, our Postmaster General makes twice as much as our President.
Really?
He's less than making $400,000 a year, not counting bonuses, privileges, etc. But the trickle down he's done like Reagan has created a massive disaster for your everyday letter carrier, window clerk, and mail handler. One thing they did, as Bernie said, we called her the Tiger Lady in Ohio. She took out of five districts that distributed mail to one. Every state in the United States has taken all their postal service distributions and taking it to one central city, not counting on what those people got to choose, retire, change your craft, or drop out. I was worked beyond belief. I've been with them 30 years, and I loved my job.
And when I was at the union 30 years ago, there was over 2 million postal letter carriers. We were the largest group. 10 years ago, they had jammed us down to 100,000. Now, since starting in California, Florida, and New York, they cut us again, and now we are only 500,000 letter carriers. And that's an actual fact.
Yeah.
But through the postal newsletters, what we have seen is the postal committee is your congressional guides that make meetings with our postmaster general. And he had a great idea from McCain that our retirement that we've been paying 75 years in advance for, mm-hmm. that's up in $49 to $50 billion, he wants to donate that to the Highway Travel Railroad and Bridge Plan. Just hand over our retirement money. The last 3 months in our newsletters, we've had all these wonderful things he wants to do.
Wow.
And we're like, can't we just impeach that guy and fire him?
Yeah. Bernie, you know, said he thought that some of these things that have been attributed to the Postmaster General were actually coming out of right-wing members of Congress instead. Could it be that you're misreading your newsletter, or that both are happening, or any sense of that?
Yes. This man, the Postmaster before, was the one that used leftover UPS airplanes so we could use American postal airplanes to get mail around faster with express mail and priority.
Oh, you're talking about the before, the current one is Mr. Donahue, right?
Yes.
So you're talking about the guy before him.
Yes, Donahue was the one that made progressive things. The one that's in now is Porter. Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, Bill, this is something we need to pay a lot of attention to. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. The largest employer, non-unionized employer in the United States is Walmart. The largest unionized employer in the United States is the United States Postal Service. That's why it's in the crosshairs of Republicans. They're trying to destroy unions. This is the largest unionized employer in the country. We'll be back. Back to mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, and on the line with us, Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. And hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Quite a lot is up in the world today. The police in Ferguson today broke their silence of nearly a week and identified the officer involved in the fatal shooting of unarmed teenager Michael Brown. They said the officer was Darren Wilson, a six-year veteran of the Ferguson Police Force, who had no disciplinary actions taken against him. They said that Brown was believed to have taken part in a robbery at a nearby convenience store shortly before the shooting and had pushed somebody inside the convenience store, and that Brown had stolen a box of Swisher Sweets cigars. He had forcefully pushed the clerk back into a display rack before leaving, they said. Benjamin Crump, a lawyer for the Brown family, said that nothing based on the facts before us justifies the execution-style murder by this police officer in broad daylight.
Right. And CNN is playing the video of that inside the store, and you know, it's pretty damning. But on the other hand, as the family says, when did petty larceny basically become a capital offense?
And then the question is that despite that, there is still the question of what actually happened outside the convenience store. In other words, that may have happened, but how did the encounter with the officer go down?
Right.
We still don't know.
Right.
The Iraq crisis, the European Union today, foreign ministers have condemned atrocities and abuses against religious minorities in Iraq, with Germany warning it cannot stand by and watch people being, quote, slaughtered, unquote. They had an emergency meeting in Brussels. They left it to individual states whether they would arm Iraq's Kurds, against the Islamic State, or ISIS, as some people call it. Militants in the north, France and the U.S. have already moved to supply the Kurds with arms. The German foreign minister said he's flying to Iraq to meet Kurdish leaders and said, we cannot just watch as people are slaughtered there. If the current threat level persists, I can't rule out that we will have to deliver weapons. Other countries seem to be moving in that direction, too. So that's an interesting development there. Also, as you know, President Obama yesterday said that the U.S. had broken the siege on Mount Sinjar, and yet Yazidi leaders in the north and U.N. officials are saying, well, actually, that's not the case. But even though the north side of the mountain, things have improved, on the south side of the mountain, which is much more inaccessible, things have not improved.
Hmm.
And the only Yazidi member of parliament who was herself injured in a helicopter crash on Tuesday as she was delivering aid, is saying it's not true that things have improved. She was saying that she suspects that the special forces and Marines would have landed a helicopter on the north side because it's almost impossible to land on the south side. She thinks there are between 70 and 80,000 Yazidis still on the south side without ISIS at the bottom. It's also being pointed out that Mount Sinjar is 50 or 60 miles long and 5 to 10 miles wide. And it would be very difficult to do a complete assessment of the mountain in the brief time that the special forces were up there.
Right. Remarkable.
The Ukrainian government says its troops have destroyed military vehicles that cross the border from Russia into eastern Ukraine. The office of Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko announced the news Friday on the presidential website, saying that Ukraine destroyed a significant portion of the military column, which was seen by reporters from both The Guardian and The Telegraph. Russia is saying that that's simply not true and is saying that it's, quote, some kind of fantasy that a Russian column went into Ukraine at all. Then they didn't, that nothing went into Ukraine, and that nothing has, in fact, been destroyed.
So,
NATO, yes.
So we're talking about the Russian column that was supposed to go to the Donetsk, the city that's been bombed so badly by...
No, not the aid column. This was separate from the aid column, but in the same vicinity. It was a small column of, like, 20 to 23 military vehicles. That was seen at late dusk, early night, crossing the border through a barbed wire fence that was broken into Ukraine from Russia by a reporter for The Guardian and The Telegraph.
And Russia's denying it, and Ukraine is saying that they took them out.
They're saying they've taken a significant portion of it out, yes.
Wow. So I so hope this is not Archduke Ferdinand version 2.
I really hope, because this is an escalation.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is really an escalation.
Yeah, assuming these reports are correct. Yeah.
Exactly. Everything is very murky, and it's moving very fast. Senator Ted Cruz says President Obama is holding border security hostage in exchange for amnesty. He's written an op-ed in the Texas Tribune. Says the solution is quite simple to the immigration issue. Secure the border and the amnesty, end the amnesty, and implement a system that celebrates legal immigration. If that is, Democrats would let us.
Jeez. This is just demagogue language. I mean, there's the Senate already passed comprehensive immigration reform. It's sitting in the House, and John Boehner won't let it come to the floor for a vote where it will pass.
And meantime, Senator Mitch McConnell is demanding of Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid that the two bills that passed in the House just before they went on their five-week recess be brought to the floor of the Senate for a vote as soon as they get back in September.
What would happen if Harry Reid did that?
I think it would be very interesting. Well, I think the Dreamers one would certainly not pass, and I think the one that... changes the 2008 law that treats children from countries that don't have a border with the U.S. unaccompanied minors, I don't think that would get 60 votes either.
Right.
I don't think that Reid will bring them to the floor.
Yeah, there you go. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and I'm very pleased to have Reverend Mark Thompson on the line with us, civil rights activist, host of Make It Plain with Mark Thompson on Sirius XM Progress from 6 to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday Eastern Time over on Facebook.com/Make It Plain and to Twitter at Make It Plain. Hey, Mark, it's been a long time. How are you?
Fine, man. It's been far too long, Tom. I'm good. How are you, my friend? Appreciate all the work you continue to do, man.
Thank you. I'm fine. You're in Ferguson, Missouri right now?
Yes, I am right here at the scene of the newly alleged crime today. We're just learning the police are putting out video suggesting that Mike Brown robbed this establishment called the Quick Trip. Prior to his altercation with Officer Darren Williams. We just got the name today of the officer, but they've released this video alleging it to be Mike Brown. People here are very upset because they don't think it looks like Mike Brown at all, and they believe the police are trying to spin this and propagandize that Mike Brown was a criminal suspect, and that's why he engaged the police officer. So there's still a lot of passion here. The good news is that the militarized police activity seems to have ceased, at least for the past 24 hours. I was here last night, and there was no such thing going on. So the police are making nice right now. But people, it's still not doing enough. It doesn't make the issue go away, and that is Mike Brown's unnecessary extrajudicial execution. That has not gone away, and now it is even, people are even more upset, Tom, about the fact that the police are trying to allege that Mike was committing a crime just before he engaged the officer who killed him.
Right. And I've got CNN on the TV here, and they've been playing that video, kind of nonstop. Boy, Fox News has got their talking points, but I don't know when Mark even if it was Mike Brown, when did robbery become a capital offense where you kill people for it?
Right. Well. Listen, man. Let's go back even further. I mean, when have you ever heard of someone being tried, convicted, sentenced, and executed on the street without first even being apprehended, Tom?
Right.
I mean, he wasn't even apprehended or arrested.
Right.
Before you even get to it being a capital offense, I mean, this officer did not get out of the car to question him. He didn't, try to use probable cause to say, hey, we consider you to be a suspect. None of that happened. He pulled him down and said, hey, I guess what they're going to try to tell us, which really, I think, makes their case look even worse. So what are we supposed to believe? He just pulled up in the car. Hey, you look like this suspect. And boom. You did. I mean, I don't see how that really
helps their case at all.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of, he was a black guy, you're a black guy. Aha! That's it!
That's right.
Yeah. It's called profiling.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a profiling and an execution, a one-stop shop. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it has yet to be proven that was Mike Brown. I'm just another two time. You're a sharp guy. Let's just walk through this for a minute. The premier witness who we've seen on TV, very eloquent, very articulate, Dorian Johnson, who was with Mike. I'm sure you've seen him. Your audience has seen him. We've all seen him. Okay. Dorian on yesterday, when we spoke with his attorney, Freeman Bowser, who's actually former mayor of St. Louis, took him to be interviewed by federal authorities. At the conclusion of that interview, and he said, they challenged him, they questioned him vigorously. At the conclusion of that interview, Dorian Johnson was put into protection and is now a federal witness. Tom, you really think the federal government will go out on a limb like that for a witness that they had any reason to believe that was involved in the commission of a robbery with Mike Brown? Because that's what the police alleged. Not only did Mike Brown rob this joint, but that Dorian Johnson did it with him.
But sometimes the police will overlook a smaller crime for a larger crime. And if the larger crime is murder, and that's what they're holding him as a witness for, they would easily overlook robbery. But you know, even at that, when did robbery become a capital offense? Did you know, Mark, about what happened back in 2009 in Ferguson? The police department charged a guy. It was an African-American guy who was 52 years old. Henry Davis was his name. And they arrested him because there was an outstanding warrant for a guy named Henry Davis. It wasn't him. It was a different Henry Davis, different Social Security number, different middle name. They arrested this guy in the pre-dawn hours, as they are wont to do, beat the crap out of him, and then charged him with the crime of bleeding on their uniforms.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
I did see that.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
And again, we weren't here, so those types of things go unanswered and don't get the attention that they deserve, as are many other cases. There's been other police killings in this community and in St. Louis.
Yeah. The other issue that seems to me nobody is bringing up is the fact that you can attribute this to what you want. I attribute it to 32 years of Reaganomics and insane trade policies, but whatever. Layered on top of 400 years of insane racism in this country that continues to this day. But the fact of the matter is that unemployment in the African American community and among young people is off the charts. I mean, the economy sucks. We, you know, our the anti-poverty programs that LBJ had put into place were dismantled in the 90s and in the 2000s. We got some serious problems in this country, and sometimes those structural problems pop out as personal problems. And why is nobody talking about this larger issue about I've said it. You know, your thoughts on this, Reverend?
Yeah. Well, look, our colleagues in the MSM have a slogan. You know it well. If it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
And so there's not going to be a lot of coverage of those socioeconomic issues that you're describing that really lead to a lot of these things, a lot of these problems. Why are so many black men just standing outside, walking in the street? Well, because they don't have jobs. But that doesn't mean they're criminals. That doesn't mean that they are committing crimes. It just means they are unemployed. That's the real crime, that they're unemployed. And then, of course, the other crime, too, there's been a strong effort to stereotype this community and the black community in general as criminal, deviant, and violent, and riotous. This community is peaceful. I'm here right now. People are demonstrating in a nonviolent fashion. The real rioters in Ferguson are the police themselves. The officer who killed Mike Brown and the police actions up until Wednesday night have been riotous, not what the community has been doing. And people have forgotten, you know, police riot too. Doesn't matter what group it is. A riot is a riot is a riot. And that's the way the police have been behaving. You know, we can go back and Tom, I know you're a student of history. You go back and look at the era of lynchings in this country, and there was one year that was worse than any other, 1919, the Red Summer. If you research that, you'll find
that, you know, whites rioted, white mobs rioted, and the police helped them and rioted along with them. Looking at what's happened here in Ferguson, what's happened in L.A., what happened to Eric Garner in New York, what happened to the young lady or to the, by the, at the hands of the California Highway Patrolman. And now we're just learning a story that's coming out. I don't know if you've seen this, but another unarmed African-American male was killed in New Orleans this week, and they've been trying to keep that under wraps. When you look at these cumulative incidents, it feels like we've gone back to the red summer of 1919, but since it's the police and we're up to date, we may as well call this the blue summer of 2014.
Very well said. Very well said. Reverend Mark Thompson, civil rights activist, host of Make a Plane with Mark Thompson on Sirius XM Progress, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m., facebook.com/makeitplane. Mark, it is great talking to you again, my friend. Thank you so much for the report.
Listen, brother, love you, miss you. We got to keep close to
that. Back at you. Back at you. We'll talk soon.
All right, man. Take care.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls on Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. David in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV system. What's up? David?
Yeah.
In Albuquerque? You are on the air.
Yes. You were talking about unions.
Yeah.
I belong to, well, my family belongs to the Teamsters in here in New Mexico. And they provide, have always provided a great protection for the individual Teamster against, you know, working for. I worked for a group of Teamsters that work for, in the movie industry, and they have all kinds of little rules and stuff like that, and you have to sign agreements, confidentiality agreements and things like that.
Sure.
Anyways, and you're probably familiar with the Teamsters that work in the movie business, but and I can't remember what I was going to say because I started thinking about other things. And
that's quite all right. That's quite all right. You just wanted to put in a plug for unions after that guy was trashing them, right?
Yes. I've thought that the Teamsters that I've worked with, they're professionals, and they save lives, and they work hard to protect and the individuals that they drive around, that we drive around like movie people and all kinds of stuff like that, and they work with the producers in California to make how much we're going to make on a movie and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're negotiating for us. They're working for
they're
our.
They're working out for you. Yeah.
And that has not been a bad thing for, I think, for New Mexico. It's been a great thing. Recently, there's in New Mexico, there's been a real big boom because of the tax breaks that they've been giving companies to come and film here.
Right. Yeah.
And another thing, I was thinking about that got me off the subject of Teamsters was here in Albuquerque. We had a man that was just recently shot with his hands up in the air.
And, was he African American?
No, he was a white man, or he might have been Hispanic. You know, you get these blurred pictures from a helicopter and
right.
of a man standing with his hands up, and then, you know, he falls down.
Right.
And so
it's got to be a heady thing to have not only the power of life or death on your hip, but also the power of the entire state behind you, and to be a member of a community, essentially the community of cops, of police officers, who you know will have your back unless you really do something wrong, and it's got to be a heady thing. It's got to be a difficult thing for somebody of a mediocre character and or intellect or both to deal with. I mean, it's just, we need to. David, thanks for the call. Speaking of Teamsters, you know, we need to, a lot of police departments are unionized, and it's a good thing. We need to raise their pay and raise the standards for the people that are hired as police officers. It's real simple. 20 minutes past the It's Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Conrad in Ramona, California. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up, Conrad?
Hi, yeah, I'm calling to fill out some ideas I gave back in February about a draft for the police department.
Uh-huh.
The beauty of this is we know that an anonymous questionnaire found that in Wall Street executives, there was about a 14 or 20% occurrence of psychopaths, whereas in the general population, there's only 1 or 4%.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, so we have psychopaths self-selecting, recruiting themselves for positions of power at Wall Street. You know, the same thing's got to be happening with sociopaths.
In the police department. Yeah.
Now,
or even people who aren't necessarily sociopaths, but they have issues with power, authority, you know, those kind of things where they're looking to compensate for something and they really want to have that gun and that stick.
Exactly. And now the beauty of this is, the general population only has occurrence of 1 to 4% of, sociopaths or psychopaths. So, and the other thing is we need, community policing needs, requires a lot of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a 1.5 year draft like Germany has, but instead of going to the army, they go into the police force. Now you have this general, this cleansing wave of the general population with their much healthier mental attitude. Plus, they know, unlike the lifers, you know, who are going to be in there for 20 years, they don't want to turn on a fellow officer.
Yeah.
The guys who are in for only a year and a half, they won't be able to live with themselves if they keep silent on abuse they see.
But how do you, wait a second, you want basically to draft people as if you're drafting them for the army, but draft them for the police department. Being a police officer requires a fair, I realize it's not, it doesn't always work out this way, and probably didn't in a little town like Ferguson, Missouri, but it should require, you know, some level of education and a substantial level of training. You know,
well,
that's an investment
how much
that you're making in a person.
Well, I agree with that 100%. And also, so that brings up the level.
I don't want some guy running around on the streets in front of my house, you know, as a police officer with a weapon and a badge who just got drafted.
Well, but the thing is, we already know that there's sociopaths who are making their way into the police department.
So do better testing.
Than occur in the population.
Do now, better testing.
Yeah. There would have to be psychological testing. I believe if you have civil servant immunity, I mean, think of the last cop that got a needle in his arm for unjustified killing. It's never happened.
Right.
You've never seen it. So I believe if you have civil servant immunity to kill someone, that everyone should get a functioning MRI. And this is how they tell who's a psychopath or not.
Well, that's very theoretical, and it can be really, really a challenge to define a psychopath. But Conrad, thanks for your call. It's a thought provoking concept. Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's up? Mark.
You're
on the air.
Yeah. I was a labor organizer for about 9 years, and I know quite a few union organizers, and I also was friendly with a group of researchers from the University of Illinois who were studying labor organizing and, you know, labor organizing on the ground as it happens in the early 2000s. And what they found was the opposite of what your guest said, that in fact most people would rather join unions, but they're greatly intimidated. There's a great amount of illegal firings in any union campaign, any organizing campaign, at any workplace. And also, you know, there's like always the campaign when the campaign begins, the employers start their campaign, and like in the beginning of the campaign to organize, there's most of the employees of a workplace of a shop are in favor of the union, but then by the time that the employers are done with their campaign, which is usually based on misinformation and intimidation, most of a lot of the support for a union drops off.
Right.
You know, so there's
it's a $2 billion a year industry right now. brainwashing people, scaring the hell out of them about unions. It's a $2 billion a year industry, all to prevent people from making a little better pay. It's mind-boggling. Mark, thank you for your contribution to the conversation. It was a good one. Cliff, in Canyon Country, California. Hey, Cliff, what's up?
Good day, Tom. I'm going to throw my two cents in here on the union issue.
Okay.
I've been in the Teamsters in Southern California for almost 27 years, and it's tough to generalize about all unions because they're not all the same.
Sure.
You know, you got your locals, you got your internationals, and from whatever, you know, service or industry you're in, they change. My experience with my local has been, it's been, you know, we've butted heads over the years. We've had problems with our local over a few issues over the years, and some of us have asked ourselves, you know, why are we paying 60 some dollars a month for union dues when our business agent never shows up and they don't seem to care about us? But when you compare our wages and benefits and our pensions and our vacations to non-union shops doing what we're doing, it's absolutely no comparison. I mean, we get 5 paid weeks of vacation a year. We get a pension at the end of this, you know, when it's all over, that's going to pay us a check, you know, for the rest of our lives. You know, the parent company that owns us would love to fill up our warehouse with non-union $8 an hour folks with no benefits, but our union negotiates for us every 4 or 5 years, and because of our union, we get a contract that keeps us in the middle class, keeps us with medical and dental coverage, vision coverage, and at the end of it, we get a pension to retire on.
Right.
I mean, you know, no workplace is perfect, but we really appreciate what we've got because of our, basically because of our international, you know, union.
Yeah, and the Teamsters is a great union, and James Hoff is doing a superlative job running them. Cliff, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. 10 seconds? Okay. I don't want to do that to Bob. Let me put Bob on hold here, and we will be back. This is all, if you're just tuning in, we started the second hour of the program about an hour and a half ago with a conversation with one of these guys who is working for one of these groups that is involved in this national Employee Freedom Week. You know, it's like right to work, right? Right to work for less is what it really is. And this is, you can be free of your union, right? And you can be free of your benefits, too. Brilliant idea, huh? Well, they want to sell it to you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But it's Anything Goes Friday, so we're back with your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 28 minutes before the hour. And, boy, a lot going on. Donald in Oak Park, Illinois, you wanted to make it very clear that you believe it was Michael Brown who was shoplifting those cigars and then turned into what's legally a robbery, I guess, when he was confronted.
Yeah. Yeah, I was so disappointed, Tom. I was really, you know, I have a lot of rage inside of me because of what they do to our president because of his color. Yeah. And all I could see is they went ahead and shot this kid. That even furthered my anger because I'm always totally for the black people. And, you know, and the thing is you could see it on the tape. When I seen that, when I first heard it, I said, them SOBs, I said, they're going to try to convict them and destroy this kid's character like they did in the Trayvon Martin case. And that cop saying that his head was sore and all this, I said, they're going to frame him with that crap and get off the hook. Well, the thing is now that I see this thing, you know, it makes it that much, their position, even that much more even indefensible. Because, you know, in the public, the way they do, it's going to take away for what this cop did. And that's the way they're going to look at it. And it's unfair. You know, I'm from Chicago originally. We deal every day with shootings. Every single day we deal with shootings. Innocent kids, black kids, getting killed by black kids. They march in the streets with Father Flager and Jesse Jackson. But you know something? What really gets me about this, and I get angry at it because I see these young kids getting killed. Somebody knows something. It seems to be like an accepted attitude toward certain things, certain behaviors. So, either a father knows that his son, a father might know, or a mother might know that their son is involved in a gang, or a neighbor knows, and they can call up anonymously, and they can get things out. They never do. They expect the cops to go in and and handle the situations. And a lot of times, and the cops do go in there, and they find that kid, or they find a kid that's in a gang with a gun. If they have to shoot a kid, they shoot him. And next thing you know, the gun disappears, and the cops look bad. But in this case here, this cop was no good. He's a 6-year veteran, and
Donald, your phone is breaking up, but I got your point. Point made. Thank you. Bob in San Jose, California. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Yeah, what I'm calling about, many years ago, I was a labor organizer. I became a steward, a chief steward, a negotiating team member. And I can tell you, one of the things that's really missing in school education is labor history.
Yeah.
Most people don't know what unions have done in the past, how it is we have a 2-day weekend.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you about this. You know, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and went to public school in Michigan. And we studied labor history in second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. I mean, every year as part of civics, we studied labor history. I knew what the Ludlow Massacre was by the time I was 12 years old. When we moved to Atlanta and raised 3 kids in the Atlanta public school system, none of our kids learned anything about labor history.
That's the point I'm trying to make, is that in many parts of the country, people don't know what labor has done. They only get told, well, they take your money and they don't do much for you.
Yeah.
And a lot of people then say, well, why should I join a union if they don't do anything except take my money?
Yeah.
And they don't know how it is they even got to have sick leave or paid vacation.
Or a weekend that's off. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Or paid overtime. Yep.
It's a huge educational problem.
Yeah, no, I think this should be part, if we're going to have Common Core, this should be part of the standards for education, is the history of labor in the United States. And I think, frankly, the history of the progressive movement as well. Texas recently took Thomas Jefferson out of some of the textbooks, or dialed him back and replaced him with Rush Limbaugh. No, I'm not making this up. And, you know, if they're going to do that, then, you know, let's have the history of the progressive movement. Anyhow, Bob, I got to move along, but thanks for the call. Great to hear from you, and I appreciate the call. TJ in Lithonia, Georgia. Speaking of Georgia. Hey, TJ, how you doing?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to agree with the caller I just heard, the gentleman, when he was saying that it couldn't possibly be, well, not that it couldn't possibly be, but I don't think it was Mike Brown who was committing the robbery. If you look at his clothing, you see that his shoes are different. You see that he's not wearing the hat. The cigars are nowhere to be found. And the fact that they waited four or five days to hand this information out.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very bizarre. You would think that they would have done it right away to defuse the situation. Number one. Number two, I understand, and I may be wrong on this, but I've seen 2 news reports now that suggests that his friend who has been out, who had been doing some media, who was with him, has told the FBI, has told the police that, in fact, he and Mike were there in the store and that Mike Brown did try to shoplift those cigars. The guy confronted him, he pushed him, and he ran. So, you know, whether he did it or not doesn't matter in my mind. A police officer putting, you know, shooting 4, 5, 6 bullets at somebody, particularly shooting them after they've been shot, is just wrong.
Of course.
I mean, I think that, you know, we can't be in denial on the one hand. On the other hand, it's like we have criminalized being black in this country, and well, it's not like some recent event. I mean, it goes back to 1650, and you know, we never decriminalized it as a nation. I mean, we keep trying to with these various laws, and whether Mike Brown was in the robbery or not, he was executed, and this police officer, I believe, well, we don't know all the facts yet, but I think this is. There's something really, really rotten here. TJ, thanks a lot for the call. Alan in Pierpont, Ohio. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Pleasure talking to you. Now, I've been a union steward for the past 13 years up until my retirement in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I can prove any day of the week that management is not going to be good to you. out of the kindness of their heart.
Yeah, it's never happened, never will.
And never will.
With a rare exception. Apparently there's a grocery store down in Florida where it's happened, but Massachusetts. But the stockholders of the company came in and said, can't have that. That money's supposed to be in our pockets, not our workers. And what is that store called? Something Market? Market Basket, right, yeah. But that's...
And there was an exception to the rule then.
Yeah, exactly. It's the exception that proves the rule.
One of the things that I found is that people will say that the union hasn't done anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to explain to them that they are the union.
Right, right.
And if they do not attend the chapter meetings and become involved, it's just like if you don't vote, you shouldn't be able to voice your opinion about a particular politician.
Right, or at least if you don't vote, you have no moral authority to voice your opinion. I'm with you, Alan. I'm totally with you. Thank you for the call. Jerry in Long Island, New York, listening on WBAI. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I'd like to discuss Iraq and the role of the defense contractors. But first, I'd like to preface my remarks by pointing out that at one point this week, we had the Obama administration seriously considering putting U.S. troops back on the ground in Iraq. But fortunately, it was deemed unnecessary, so that won't happen for now. But just this morning, I heard that we have the Pentagon reportedly saying that it could expand the scope of U.S. airstrikes in Iraq. And so I think that if we progressives, if we feel to speak up about Iraq, then that creates a void in a vacuum, which only is going to be filled by the same conservative voices who are in the hip pockets of the defense contracting industry, in my opinion. And they're also the same conservatives who urged us getting involved militarily in Iraq in 2003. Hmm. And they're at it again, urging us to get re-involved more and more now. And I'd like to bring up something that you mentioned earlier this week when you said the military-industrial complex, the defense contractors, are benefiting from and must be very happy with what's happening in Iraq now. I agree with you. But I think that for the rest of us who are not defense contractors, what we have to focus in on is the fact that it's innocent civilians who eventually and inevitably, they're going to end up getting hurt from all this military conflict.
I agree with you. And like I said, thank you, Jerry, for the call. And like I said earlier, I was watching CNN before we went on the air, and the person who was running the show, the host, had on L. Paul Bremer, and she was like, oh, thank you, Mr. Bremer. Thank you so much for your expertise and your wisdom, and we really appreciate it. And I'm screaming at the TV, yelling at the TV, going, you know, ask him, how does he sleep at night knowing that he laid off the entire Iraqi army? He fired the entire Iraqi army, this de-bathification program, fired all the civil servants who were Ba'ath Party members, and fired all the police. And then him and Don Rumsfeld stood back and said, hey, we're great disciples of Hayek and Mises and Milton Friedman. And we know that if you get the government out of the way, which they had just done, you get the government out of the way, you're going to have a libertarian paradise. Iraq was going to be their experiment. In fact, it was their experiment. Iraq shows you what happens when you have a libertarian paradise. Hey, it's the libertarian paradise of Iraq. We're going to do away with big government. We're going to end it. No more Social Security. No more subsidies for food. No more subsidies for oil. No more nothing. No more army. No more police force. You got nothing, right? And then they dropped all the tariffs. They said any foreign company that wants to do business in Iraq, come on in. L. Paul Bremer, and he's on television pontificating about the mess that he created? Really? Really? Anyhow, we'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Back more with more of your calls on the Voice Pro.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And check out our brand new and improved website at TomHartman.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Telling someone to stop squishing the bleeping bread, bleeping being actually the F word, will get you handcuffed, tossed in the back of a police car, and arrested for disorderly conduct in North Augusta, South Carolina. It's actually a violation of the Constitution, according to the Supreme Court. Anyhow, David in Wilcox, Arizona. Hey, David, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Mr. Hartman. Well, unions and cop unions in particular. Mm-hmm. I've been in three unions. I was in the retail sales one when I was 16 years old, and I was in the UAW one making machines that make the cars, and I've been in the aerospace one.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I've even been to Black Lake up there in northern Michigan for the union retreat. But what has happened with the police unions is they've just become so corrupt. Anytime a cop does anything, the blue wall of silence comes up, they circle the wagons, and nothing can be done. And, you know, I agree, unions are extremely necessary. But the one union that needs to be completely disbanded, and I wish Obama would just, an executive order, just disband these unions for the cops. They're just so corrupt, so evil. They just think that no cop ever does anything wrong. And they always say, oh, well, you know, for about 100 years now, well, there's just a few bad apples. Well, if that were true, if the majority of police were good men, they would ferret out the bad apples.
Yeah, well, here's
that
a question, David.
Happen.
Is being a police officer, being a member of a workforce, is it a job?
Well, yes, it is.
And do you have bosses and working conditions to be concerned about?
Well, yep.
Okay, yeah. So shouldn't you be represented by a union? I mean, I don't have a problem with the police union circling the wagon on behalf of their individual cop. I mean, they'll win or lose based on the facts.
That's just not so. In a perfect world, it would be. But that's just not what occurs. I mean, you know, go on the Internet and see all the brutality that police do. And I mean,
but it's not the unions that are circling the wagon for the cops. It's the rest of the police department. It's the prosecutors. It's the whole machine of government.
I agree. Absolutely. And the only step that we can take, you know, as citizens, is to just take the union.
No, there's a very simple step that we can take way short of that. I mean, other countries have unionized police forces and they work just fine. It's what you find is that if you look at the Scandinavian countries, where the police behave very well, thank you very much. They either Finland or Denmark has the one of the lowest crime rates in the world, and one of the lowest levels of police abuse of people in the world, and one of the best educational systems in the world, because their teachers and their cops make the same as their doctors. And as a consequence of that, in order to become a teacher or a police officer in that country is really hard. You've got to demonstrate that you really are competent. You're really good at what you do. You really want to make that a lifetime commitment. And in exchange for that, you get really well paid. And, you know, I think the problem that we have in the United States is cops are underpaid and undertrained. I mean, we're not weeding out the guys who really shouldn't be walking around with a gun and the force of law behind it. Thanks for the call. You know, I get it that you don't like police unions. I disagree. 10 minutes before that. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly. Great work, guys, on the new website. It's incredible. To everyone, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everyone at all of the various companies that syndicate our program, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, and all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, others around the country, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio at netrootsradio.com, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, hey, how are you? To Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors and underwriters, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you so much. You know, when you call Senator Sanders' office and say, hey, I'm so glad Bernie's on, or when you call a sponsor and say thanks so much for sponsoring the show, or when you call a radio or television station and say thanks so much for carrying this show, it means a lot. It actually does. It's, you know, it keeps us going. James in Ocala, Florida. Isn't that how you say it, James?
Yes, it is, Tom. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want you to know that unions are strong down in Florida. I'm in a right-to-work state. I'm a retired LIUNA worker, a laborer, 37 years, who now work for a county, and I just organized a county.
Cool. That's great.
Yep.
Good to know, James.
And I want your listeners to know that if the word gets out there and we keep preaching a decent living wage for people, unions will come back strong. I'm a firm believer in it. It's the only way I could have retired on a decent living.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You're absolutely right. James, thanks for the plug. I appreciate it. Tony in Winchester, California. You wanted to talk about militarization of the cops, of the police?
Yeah. Thanks a lot for picking up on and having my call. It's the Bremer, who you mentioned, you know, he started the whole thing. And so now the ISIS got the weapons, and now the weapons that we don't use over there anymore, we send back home and give it to the police department so
right.
they can have toys instead of like early Christmas presents. They say, oh, we got these fantastic blue guns and ray gun, you know, and it's a weapons exchange.
Yeah.
Just keep turning it.
I know it's welfare for the military-industrial complex is what it is, Tony. That's the pure and simple. Thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Frank in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Tom, how are you?
Good. You want to talk about the police?
Hey, I'm a proud union member, and I'd like to just bring up a couple points.
Sure.
I'm a union firefighter in Arizona. We negotiate with our city in good faith in good times and bad. We recently, as our union pointed out, the city had made an error in revenue calculations. We had a bunch more coming in than they thought. So we not only got our bonus of $750, the city decided through the city manager and council to award all members of our city $750 one-time bonus, all pointed out through union negotiations.
Yeah. See, that's how it works.
I also get tired of the blaming unions for GM's downfall. If you look at the garbage cars they were putting out in the 70s, it had nothing to do with the unions. They put together what they were given.
Yeah.
But GM and Chrysler in particular put out garbage cars, lost market share repeatedly, and now they want to blame the unions for bringing down the big three. It just really irritates me.
Well, it was partly that, and it was partly letting foreign companies import cars without tariffs. And, I mean, right now, if you want to sell a General Motors car in South Korea or in China, it costs a fortune. You go to South Korea, you go to China, you don't see GM cars because they basically don't let them in the country. The Chinese cars will be here in a year or two, but right now South Korean cars are all over this country. Same thing in Japan, by the way. The Japanese make it very, very difficult to import U.S. cars into Japan. The Germans make it hard to import U.S. cars into Germany, other than Ford, which has factories there. So.
And I understand, but you can't blame labor.
No, you can't. It's our politicians. It's trade policy. It's all these things. Good on you, Frank. Thanks a lot for the call. Daryl in, is it Neely, Nebraska?
Yes.
Hey, what's up?
You know, I think from all tragedy comes something positive. And in this case, what's going on there in Missouri, this is, again, exposing Sharpton, Jackson, Mark Thompson that you just had on, you, and our president, as the race baiters you are. There's another side to stories. You refuse to wait and get the facts. You condemn this cop.
Who executed this young man? Daryl, nice try. James in Spokane, Washington. Hey, James, what's up?
Good to talk to you, Doc. Wanted to mention something first. Do you think poverty should be considered a disability?
No, I think it should be considered a social disease, and we should cure it.
Okay. About corporations and being people, if and when we decide they're certifiable, as many of them are, how are we supposed to commit them?
You know, it's really pretty straightforward. People who harm other people, we imprison. Or we segregate basically from the rest of us. We put them in jail, or we make them pay fines or penalties or whatever. Corporations that don't serve the needs of their communities, that don't serve the needs of their employees and that don't serve the needs of their customers should be, they should get the corporate death penalty. You know, create, clean that space out and let somebody else fill that niche. It's, and we used to do this in the United States. It used to be that the first sentence of a corporate charter had to say, this corporation is created for the purpose of benefiting the people of the community of the state of fill in the blank. And as a secondary purpose, this corporation will build railroad cars or whatever it does. And, you know, all that went away in the late 1890s as a result of John Rockefeller, you know, throwing down the gauntlet and taking on the states. And it never should have gone away. We need to go back to it. James, thanks for the call. Thanks, and apologies to everybody on hold. We will pick up your calls on Monday as everything goes, summer continues to roll along. Have a great weekend, and don't forget, democracy ain't a spectator sport. You really do have to participate, regardless of your opinion. Please participate. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you. See you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.